Welcome to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner, the show where we say goodbye to burnout and hello to freedom through automation. We're Jamie and Jessica, and in each episode, we'll explore how you can transform your tax or accounting practice, giving you the freedom you desire as an entrepreneur. We'll share stories and lessons from industry pros who have successfully transitioned from being skill-based producers to thriving business owners. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to build a business you love. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. I am your co-host, Jamie Grohl.
And I am Jessica Smith.
All right. Well, we are back with another episode of our special series where Jessica is spilling all the tea. She is sharing with us some of her juiciest stories of clients. She's been in the industry for a really long time, and she has seen some things, guys. So while we're sharing these juicy stories, she's also going to share with you some of the things you need to know when it comes to the different cases that she has been a part of and give you some background on it so that you are maybe filing away these little nuggets. So in the future, if you ever bump into any of these cases, which I hope you don't, honestly, some of them are pretty gnarly, that you are able to say, I remember hearing about this. Here's what I should do next. So let's dive in. And Jess, what do we have today? So who are we talking about now?
So I'm going to call it for those of you listening, I've got my Let's Commit Tax Fraud shirt on, applicable for what we're going to chat about today. And just a disclaimer, this is not a promotion of committing tax fraud. We are saying this in jest. But I want to talk today about an interesting case involving a escort or sugar baby, whatever you want to label her as, who was potentially involved in a money laundering scheme.
Oh, you tell lore. That's crazy.
All right. So for a little background, guys, I used to work at a law firm, a tax law firm, and we handled a lot of criminal cases. And so we had a team of attorneys. A lot of the stuff that we had come across our desk didn't necessarily rise to criminal nature, but sometimes we would have cases that could very much turn into that. And so there were a lot of things that we were kind of trained to recognize early on, just to see like what exposure might our client have in the event this very innocent on its face situation looks like, what could it turn into? So we had a client come in. And she had no problem with us understanding what she did for a living. And so she said, you know, I am an escort. I have a gentleman that I am currently seeing. We are monogamous. It was a monogamous escort sugar baby kind of relationship, right? And and she really enjoyed spending time with this gentleman. And you know, like all sugar baby relationships, he was very, very friendly with the money that he would provide her. And at some point, you know, she had been in this arrangement for a couple of years. And, you know, she felt that the amount of money that was coming into the arrangement was enough that it would make sense that she probably should at least file taxes, claim it as income. So at the very least, like there was some protection for herself because she didn't want, I think at some point she wanted to buy a home and she needed to have some record of like where her income came from. So that kind of was the start of it.
Yeah.
And so she was concerned because she said, look, I've been in this arrangement now for a couple of years and I haven't filed any tax returns and I have about this much money that I've earned. So I'm just wondering, you know, how do I get current? Right. So it kind of came to us as like, oh, I'm just a non-filer. And, you know, there was no judgment there. All income is taxable unless you tell the IRS otherwise, whether it's earned, you know, legally or not. And we weren't there to judge the reason behind how the income was earned. We were just there to kind of like discuss what her exposure was.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
I want to know, like, are we talking like thousands? Are we talking hundreds of thousands? Are we talking?
Are we going to get to that? I think it was definitely like, I think it started in the hundreds of thousands and then maybe teetered a little bit later, starting to get closer to like the $1 million number. Ooh, okay. Yeah. So
that's one heck of a...
No, it was a
really
lot.
Relationship.
She was concerned, right? And so, you know, we went through the process. So typically with clients like this, I believe she didn't have any books or records. So because she was self-employed, right? This was not a W-2 position. we were going to have to report this as if she were a self-employed individual, we needed to produce books and records, right? Because, of course, we weren't going to just file or assist her with filing a tax return if we couldn't, you know, substantiate the number, because part of our job was mitigating or at least trying to identify what the risk was going to be. And at the very least, if we were going to, you know, have her bring these, her account current, that we at least want to have the correct income and expenses reported so that we could at least substantiate what was on the return. So we were given bank records, and with anything, right, go through all the bank records, start to total up the income. And we start to kind of notice something that looked like a little suspicious or a little strange. And so our role is, again, we're here to mitigate the risk. And so we brought a couple things up, and, you know, one of the things that we later got into the conversation on, and I think this was after we had built a rapport with her, she talked about how, you know, as of more recently, you know, within this arrangement, this gentleman that she was seeing, she would assist him with selling assets. And these were very expensive assets, and they varied in what they were. But he, I think because of his prominent affiliation potentially with the community or some kind of like, hey, like, I don't want the public to know about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
He had presented this to her as, hey, you know, so that I don't have unnecessary scrutiny in what I'm dealing with, you can help by just basically being the face. We'll report, I'll pay the taxes. You can report the income, all that kind of stuff. So that kind of like grew into that. And so she would essentially assist with selling of these expensive assets.
The houses, watches.
I think they were like collector cars, if I recall correctly. So they were, yeah. So we're talking like expensive vehicles.
Yeah, like $100,000 cars. Yeah.
And so she, and I don't recall how many were involved, but it happened a few times, and it got to the point where like the way that she was describing it and like the way that the money took place, and like it seemed like these cars were being sold significantly over market value kind of scenario, right? We were running into the issue of like, oh, is there sales tax? Is she considered a dealer at this point? Like we were looking at like all the logical like explanations, like what exposure might be here. And at some point, I believe someone said, hey, this could be money laundering. This looked very similar to one of the methods that massive amounts of cash is essentially, you know, laundered because it's not earned legally. And I'm not a legal expert. I don't have like all the information on like how all that comes to be. But some of the things that we were trained to look for, because again, you know, this Corporate Transparency Act thing, right? Like it's supposed to show who are beneficial owners of these LLCs to prevent money laundering. And I've been on the side of like what it looks like when that potentially could happen. And so I see like the need for a law like that to help identify when there are, again, just these shell companies that are being created. These people file and pay taxes, but it's they do that to make them look legitimate. And then the underlying issue is that they're actually laundering money. And there's so many ways that this can be done. But this was one way, was through the selling a significantly over fair market value, these very expensive collector type cars. Okay. So she believed, and again, you know, you got to take what your client says at face value.
Right.
She believed that it was just, oh, he just is a car collector and he knows a lot of rich people and they all want these cars and they're all buying and selling these vehicles because that's just what they do. And so, you know, you really start to look at all of the underlying facts of the information. And we have no clue who this guy was. Like, there was literally no mention. There was no way to identify who this gentleman was through any of the records that she provided us. I don't even remember her name. So, like, I have no clue who he truly was. But I think she just got caught up in it. And he was so very generous with the money that he had given her, that, you know, why wouldn't, if you don't want the cash cow to go away, like, especially if you don't really, really understand that it's possibly.
Right. I'm sure, like, this is okay. This is something we all do.
I think he was super powerful as well.
Money in our group. You know, like, when you have this much money, this is what you do. Like, if you didn't come from that, you don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, look at that. It took you guys undoing all of that to be like, oh, something is up here, right? Like, she would have to have, like, looked at it through that trained lens even to identify it. So, yes, for all of those that are like, how could she not know?
I truly believe, especially, like, when you actually get the chance to talk to these people, like, I think that there was an actual component of there was feelings for this person, even though it was supposed to be just an arrangement. Yeah. You know, I think she did grow to enjoy being with this person. And I think that given the nature of how much money she was receiving, that she didn't really want that to go away. And here she had this very powerful man, which I think could have its own level of concern. Like, if you're thinking, like, I don't want to piss this guy off, like, what's going to happen, right?
Right. He's running in the mafia, and you're.
It just was a super interesting case. And again, there's no judgment for what she chose to do, because in her thought process, she came to us saying, like, I just think that I should be paying taxes on this. Like, I think that it would make sense, like, to not
start a chip leaf.
Yeah, it did. And a lot of the times, especially when it comes to tax representation, I think she probably had an inkling, because typically people don't just immediately go to lawyers, right? Like,
right.
And this wasn't like a small, like, single shop. Like, this was a very big firm. Yeah. We handled massive cases in this firm. And, you usually had a team of people, like, working on this. And I think, too, that, again, there was a little inkling of, like, hey, maybe something isn't on the up and up. And she, I think, was looking to maybe first protect herself, but in the long run, I think she's like, well, I have to make sure that, like, he's, you know, he said he'll pay the taxes, so, like, you know, I just want to make sure he's protected, kind of thing. So
it was
interesting. I don't recall exactly how that case ended, because she came into the firm closer to the end of my time there, but I remember, you know, like, me and all the little girls at the firm, we would all go to lunch, and we would just be like, oh my gosh, like, did you see she walked into the $5,000 Chanel handbag? And we were like, I want a sugar daddy. Like, totally ignoring the fact that she's, like, possibly laundering money and doesn't really know it. Or, you know, it just sounded so great. But that's what we would talk about. We did not care about anything else. We're like, I could sleep with no guy for $5,000 Chanel handbag.
So understanding that you left, so you didn't actually see the full thing play out, but, like, how did you guys break it to her? Like, when you had to have that conversation with her and be like, hey, there's something else going on here. Like, we believe this could be something more extensive.
Yeah.
Like, what was the, just for, like, the practice owners out there, because this is very big, but when you're having to have those conversations, to your point, like, you're assuming the best of intentions from your client. But you then have to say, like, what's been going on is a very big deal. Mm-hmm. How did you handle that? And what was the approach that the firm took?
So it's a little bit different when you are engaged with an attorney firm, right? So there's a misconception that if you happen to work with a licensed tax professional, so enrolled agents or CPAs, that we are bound by the same privilege that an attorney-client relationship has, which is absolutely incorrect. There's absolutely no privilege at all when it comes to a CPA or EA client relationship that is strictly reserved for attorneys. So it's a little bit different. If I were to suggest this from the lens of, like, just a firm owner who is not an attorney, as soon as you suspect anything that could potentially have criminal implications, like, literally anything, the best course of action is, for one, you as the counsel for that person is to go get your own attorney, and even get a paid consultation, explain to that attorney what you're running into. And and that attorney can assist with communicating, hey, we think that you need to seek legal advice. We are going to cease all communications. Because anything at that point is subject to a subpoena. So I recall that I was on a call with a potential client, and her business partner got on the line, and he almost immediately started talking about, he was a tax protester. So he believed the taxes are illegal. Like, he didn't have to pay them. He word vomited how many years he had not paid or filed taxes and how he felt it was legal. And I tried to cut him off so many times. And I said, you need to stop talking because I have confidentiality. I have no privilege. So whatever you are telling to me now, it was a recorded phone call. Like, come on. Anything you are saying to me now is subject to a subpoena. So if you are prosecuted and they want information about a conversation, legally, I am obligated to, I could be called as a witness and I have to produce the evidence that is related to that. So as practice owners, if you talk to a attorney that is versed in those kind of scenarios, that way you're not like mistakenly like bringing something to a client that is not to be the case. But you want to know your own legal exposure because you want to at least stop the conversation any further about the matter right away with the client and just leave it at, like, I think it's in your best interest to seek the advice of an attorney who can talk about the potential exposure for criminal activity. And then furthering that, letting them know that I'm doing this in your best interest because I am subject to subpoena and anything that you say or communicate with me, I'm legally bound to reply to a subpoena. However, if you can have counsel with an attorney, you could have some privileged conversations about what your options are. And there are ways as non-attorneys to work under attorneys through what's called a covel agreement. They have to be done very specifically. Like, you can't just willy-nilly do a covel agreement, but it allows for the privilege to be extended to a client because the attorney essentially is the one that hires you and all the communication goes to the attorney. Like, you don't actually have a direct connection communicating with the client. But it's very specific. Like you have to do it. You have to do it in a very certain way. So there are ways, I hate to say like around it, but really the most important thing for practice owners is any inkling, go have a paid consultation with an attorney that you
protect yourself.
Yeah, protect yourself first. And then on their advice, help to facilitate the ceasing of the communication and then moving that matter to someone who could at least like counsel the client. So in our case, we let her know while we understand you're not currently under investigation for anything that we've discussed now, there is some exposure, mainly because on its face, while you believe it is this, when we file a tax return, that could now expose that the underlying thing, right? Like, because the IRS reserves the right to audit you, right? They might not know, hey, this is money laundering, right? But they could say, oh, well, this return is going to be popped because, I don't know, this expense item looks funky and we're going to audit. And that could then expose other things. So I think at that point, the conversation was more around, we think it could turn into this. And while we are not advising you to not file your tax returns and not do these things, you are doing so with the possibility of this happening.
Right.
And usually we would also sometimes bring on other counsel so that we could have other outside experts. So it's different definitely in a law firm, but that's kind of the way that we would approach those cases. You have to do so sometimes from a very sensitive nature because one thing that one of my mentors told me is to avoid the F word, which is fraud. And because clients don't like it. They like, it's super scary. If you, even if it truly is, even if you unequivocally believe this is fraud, like you have to be careful because the last thing the client wants to hear from their counsel is that you believe that fraud has been committed. Even though that's a lot of times what legal counsel is going to like uncover and they're going to say, okay, well now we have to determine how do we defend you? Yeah, it's just an interesting process. That was, I think, probably one of the more interesting, that was probably the more fun case to be on because like it just came in like, oh, she just wants to file her taxes. And no, she like all this stuff, you know?
No home.
And she just came in just dripped in the most beautiful garments and the prettiest handbags and her hair was always blown out and all of us were like, oh my God, what a beautiful life.
But you know what? How scary that would be to have so much of your life and your livelihood tied up into this thing that ended up like crumbling down and around you.
Yeah.
So wow. Well, thank you for sharing about money laundering and our friend the escort. That's a fascinating story. Well, thank you, Jess. I appreciate that. And if you love this story, we have more of these coming for you. This is a short series we're going to be doing here on Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. If you loved it, share it with a colleague, let them know so they can learn or at least hear some of these crazy stories. If you love this, do leave us a rating. We would love to have your 5 stars and let us know that we're doing a good job and also let others find us out there as well. So thank you all for being here. We'll see you on the next episode of Diary of Tax Practice Owner.
Thank you for tuning in to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. We hope today's episode inspired you to take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners just like you. Don't forget to follow us on social media or on our website at workflowsfortaxpros.com for more resources and insights. Until next time, remember, automation equals freedom. And building a business that you love is within your reach. See you soon.